What kind of edge do the Nuggets need? Where do you see the Nuggets a year from now? Plus a look around the playoffs. This is Locked On Nuggets.
You are Locked On Nuggets, your daily Denver Nuggets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to Locked On Nuggets, your daily Denver Nuggets podcast. Part of the Locked On Network, your team every day. Thanks for making us your first listen each and every day. We're free and available on all platforms, including YouTube, which you can check out. Join the show, join the chat. We do this every day at around 10 a.m. Mountain Time. So you can join the show, get in on the chats, join the conversation on YouTube. Give us the like, subscribe over there, and check us out wherever you get podcasts. My name is Matt Moore. I'm the senior NBA writer for the Action Network, joined by my colleague and co-host, Adam Mahrez, at Adam underscore Mahrez. On Twitter. Adam, how are you on a Wednesday?
I'm good. Wednesday just getting started. I like doing these morning shows, man. I'm a big fan of this time slot.
Yeah, it's a lot easier than 1 a.m.
Maybe that's what it is. It's comparison to the worst possible time slot.
Yeah. Those, hey, how about this? 1 a.m. after 1 a.m. after the Nuggets lose to some like really terrible team because they just played like garbage.
Yeah.
Get excited for those January games now.
You know what? I already miss it.
Yeah, me too. So on today's show, we're going to talk about what kind of edge the Nuggets need. We're going to talk about where we see the Nuggets a year from now. And we're going to take a look around the playoffs because Adam and I like talking about the basketballs. That's what we like talking about, is the basketballs. So this kind of came up because there has been this conversation a little bit with the idea of playing with an edge. Guys that play, that kind of get you, that play on that very delicate line, right? And every team, not every team, a lot of teams have them. You've got guys of different types, obviously. Like Draymond Green is one for the Warriors. You even have guys that will go even a little bit further for that. Like the Miami Heat obviously have their own section of guys to stand in a hallway and look menacing. Like everyone's got their own kind of guys that they want as far as setting a tone.
They didn't even look menacing, though, in that photo. That's the problem, as they kind of looked more goofy and ridiculous. But
they set that tone of, we're not going to be messed with, and we're going to mess with you. And the question has kind of been, like, do the Nuggets need that guy? And DeMarcus Cousins, I think the idea was kind of that, like, he would bring that. There's something to the idea, Adam, as kind of a starting point. There's something to the idea as a, kind of a starting point that there is a right amount of conflict that you want in a successful
I agree with that
team structure. What are your thoughts on that?
No, 100% agree. There's different types of conflict, of course. There's a healthy conflict. There's and sometimes it can be tense. And I think what you're hinting at here is that the Nuggets probably do need a little bit more of that. And in particular, that doesn't come from Malone. I think Malone sort of tries to foster that. And that's good. You need to as a head coach, but I think they need something beyond that.
What is the like actual tangible value of having a guy like that? Like what is it that it brings specifically to this team?
Well, here's the thing about it though, Matt, because again, this can be talked too much in the abstract. We can be a little bit more specific. I think Jokic has to be the one to create that conflict. I know that sounds crazy, but like, look, one of the big stories is the Nuggets have to make up for lost time with Michael Porter. He's the one that I'm most concerned about. Like, is he going to get it? Is he going to be, you know, brought along quickly enough and forcefully enough? And to me, like, there's only so much Malone can do. There's only so much role player X can do or veteran X can do. Like, some of this is going to have to be, Jokic is probably at this next season going to have uncomfortable confrontations with Michael Porter that doesn't lose him, but that like also like asserts the will of Jokic and the will of the team to kind of get him along. And those are the things that like at this moment, we just have never seen it. So to say that you have confidence that will happen, you're going entirely on faith, not on like experience.
So for you, a lot of this is also based on the premise of like internal accountability as far as having an edge. That's where you think the most value can be found there.
Yeah. I mean, I think it really does. Like that's where that tension comes from, is the accountability aspect of it. And also just getting people on the same wavelength. I mean, that's the hard part of any group goal, is getting everybody moving in the same direction.
It's interesting just from the idea of how to do it and do it well, because you're right. I think there is a large part of this with me where I always kind of get to. It does have to be from a player of a certain caliber.
Yeah.
Like, it's got to be somebody that carries a lot of respect. And that's why I think saying that Jokic is going to have to do it, even though I don't believe he will, I think we'll just get more eye rolls. I think that's important, right? Because this is kind of where I had to get to with the Wolves, where like their guy that does that is Patrick Beverley. Like,
Patrick right. Beverley. Yeah. He's below the threshold.
Yeah.
It helped. This it got them from the 10 seed to the 7 seed or whatever. Like, it helped.
Yeah. But, like, honestly, a lot of that was just internal development and coaching. But with Beverley, I think one of the problems is, like, he's the one barking at Cat, right? Like, what are you doing? Yeah. Get it together. Like, all these types of things. But it's still just, like, you're Patrick Beverley. Like, you're still that guy, right?
He's also a goofball a little bit. Like,
yeah. Now, Memphis was like an interesting one because in the grit grind era, because you had Tony Allen, who was like definitely that guy, but they also like had a lot of shared accountability. Like, they had Mike Conley, who was like the calming voice, who'd be like, come on, we can do this. Like, let's go. Mm-hmm. Like, that positive voice. And they had Marc Gasol, who was very much like just total professionalism, who was like, no, don't do that. Right. Just do this. And then you had like Z-Bo and Tony Allen,
who were like,
I will kill you. Like, do not slack on this.
No, they had it. They had it for sure.
I wonder how much of this is, I think this is part of this has become one of the issues with like the Lakers. I do. Like, I think this is one of the issues with the Lakers is like LeBron is like his interests are diverse at this point in his life, right? He has a lot of things in the fire. I think it's hard for him to do the accountability thing at this point in his career. I think he's been looking for somebody else to do it and doesn't have another guy to do it.
Could be. I mean, it could be that LeBron's such an interesting one because his career, it's so hard to parse out where he really mastered that. I mean, he mastered so many things about basketball. It's hard to tell, did he really master that, you know, accountability? I mean, he made it work. He was good enough to make it work in championships, but it's not like Kyrie left Cleveland with an enormous respect for his leader, LeBron. Maybe that's more about Kyrie, but still, nonetheless, I think the point holds when you look at Miami, you look at Cleveland, and even this Lakers team, they found success. But I don't get the sense that there was like this great leadership from him in that way.
Here's kind of an interesting one, which is I've taken some shots at Miami and they are, you know, ridiculous in some aspects. But I've been blown away by Jimmy Butler in these playoffs. Like, he's just been, to me, there's not been enough conversation about how good he's been. You can look at the numbers, but even beyond the numbers, just he's like the engine. Like, I was just doing film watch on last night. And all of the good stuff that Miami ran was because Jimmy Butler was involved, whether it was pick and roll or making off ball cuts or like whatever. Like, Butler has just been insane. Butler's that guy that is constantly barking and constantly holding guys accountable. But you saw, like, back in March, like, they had the big blow up on the bench. Like, there is a like, he wears on people. He does. Like, he's worn on people in Chicago.
What's the context, though, now? Like, how do you view that blow up? Because I forgot about it till you just mentioned it.
Yeah.
And it was between Spoelstra and Butler. And I remember at the time, a lot of Miami insiders were like, I feel like it's a little staged. It's a little like they're both leaning into a bit. How do you view that now?
I think there is a genuine Butler eventually runs out of patience for everyone. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Of course.
Like, I just he's think that no matter who, like, I think no matter who it is, like, that's how he's built is to not, like, he, it's a purposeful choice to never have, like, no, I know this guy, I can trust him. He's burned bridges in Chicago, Minnesota, Philadelphia, and I'm sure, like, there's tension there in Miami. Like, I think that's what Miami's riding right now is, like, that line of you need tension, but it's got to be contained just enough for it to be a storm in a bottle.
The only thing to come to Jimmy's defense here, you mentioned three clown shows. You can't judge him now, but at the end of that, Chicago was a clown show. Minnesota was a clown show during the era he was there. And Philadelphia, a bit of a clown show as well. But I agree with you, it doesn't take away from your broader point. It can easily be overstated in part because he was at some weak organizations. I don't think he's leaving the Heat. I think he's going to be with the Heat for a while.
I think organizationally, you're right that they were kind of in clown. There's some clown.
But even players, even teammates.
Yeah, I'm a little bit easier on Cat than you are. I think a lot of this is like Butler.
This is prior to the personal stuff with Cat, though.
What do you mean?
The Butler era preceded COVID.
Yeah, no, I know that. I think for me, it was like having watched Cat's entire career, and I think a lot of it was like Kevin Garnett's impact on him as a rookie. I think that a lot of it with Cat was just like, he's still trying, and I still see this, like he's still trying to learn who he is. Like, I think that's a lot of it. I just think that there's a lot. I think that Towns gets misinterpreted. There are guys who I think act like they're about it who are not. I think Cat is desperately trying to be about the right things. That's the thing I think. I think that he actually cares about being about the right things. He just doesn't know how to do it. That's the read I've always kind of gotten on him. No, just Cat sucks.
I don't see it, but we don't have to argue it. The broader point was the Jimmy Butler stuff, just that level of tension. I don't know if it's honestly like that to me is a little more chaotic tension that I don't think Denver needs. There are certainly no question. There are teams that have thrived under that level of chaos and tension. Like we're fighting each other on the daily. Like this right. is how we exist. I don't think the Nuggets need that. What I think they need is their best players, which could be Jamal, but I think it's probably, especially with Jamal coming back from injury, just probably needs to be Nikola. And it needs to be that level of everybody already respects you. Everybody already like believes, like if you said anything, they'll jump on board. But now you just need to be comfortable being uncomfortable. And this is why I thought Malone, when he was asked the question about what Yoke can do, he didn't have to search for it. He knew exactly what his answer was to that question.
So that's the internal stuff, and we'll take a break here in a second. But as far as an external, because we did have the thing of in 2020 about like, are they soft? And then you had like Paul Millsap stand up to
Marcus Morris. But this is different from soft.
Do you need somebody who is not who at least is going to be the one to be like, I'm going, like I will be the one to push you away. Like, do you need that guy?
I just think they have it. Like you have Jokic and Jamal. That's your team's personality. Your two best players are your team's personality. Those guys, to me, like nobody can bully them. You might beat them, but you can't bully them. They're not intimidated. They're not scared. You know, Michael Porter's the big mystery to this one because we just haven't seen it. Like we haven't seen much of Michael. We don't know more about Michael Porter than we know. He's the one guy that you could throw an X factor. But even then, you start to get into the role players. I thought Aaron Gordon handled himself very well. Like to me, he grew in this last playoffs. That was important. You look at a guy like Monte. You look at a guy like Bones. You know, those guys to me are like, I don't think they're going to wilt under pressure in the way that you're asking about. So to me, the core guys outside of Michael Porter, I feel confident with. With Michael Porter, it's not that I don't feel confident. It's just we have to see it. We just got to see him grow, and we haven't had a chance to.
Let's take a break. We'll come back, and we'll talk about where we see the Nuggets a year from now. We'll do that when we come back on Locked On Nuggets. But first, I want to tell you about the Athletic Greens Company. So our next partner has a product that we started using like every day. I'm trying to get very health conscious because I'm turning 40 at the end of the month. So as part of that, you know, I'm really trying to put in, I'm having some heart tests done today. That's a thing that I'm having done. Getting ready getting ready for getting old. It's getting real. But as far as trying to take care of my body, that's making sure that I've got Athletic Greens every day. And with Athletic Greens, you just take one scoop. Okay, you keep it by the coffee in the morning while the coffee's brewing. You just put one scoop into the water bottle, fill it up, down it, and you're done. You're absorbing 75 high quality vitamins, minerals, whole foods, source superfoods, probiotics, and adaptogens to help start your day right. That special blend of ingredients supports your gut health, which is always important, your nervous system, your immune system, your energy, recovery, focus, and aging, all of the things. So it's just, for me, a lot of it is, like, you know, I've got kids, and so I think a lot about how important it is for me to stay healthy as I get older and as they get older. Like, I want to be around for whatever it is that I need to be doing with them through this time. But for whatever reason you have, it's also, look, there's all these kind of things for it. It's lifestyle friendly. So vegan, dairy-free, gluten-free, keto, like, whatever it is, it's fine for you. Contains less than 1 gram of sugar, no GMOs, and no nasty chemicals or artificial anything while still tasting good. It's kind of got like a tropical taste, which is really kind of nice. Tons of people take some kind of multivitamin, and it's important to choose one with high quality ingredients your body will actually absorb. AG1 is a small micro habit with big benefits. It's one thing you can do every single day to take care of yourself. And it costs you less than $3 a day. You're investing in your health, and it's cheaper than that cold brew habit. You know, Athletic Greens was created when the founder experienced a ton of gut health issues, and so they ended up on a complicated supplement routine to recover. It cost him over $100 a day, so he created Athletic Greens after experiencing how difficult it was to create an optimal nutrition routine on your own. They got over 7,000 five-star reviews recommended by professional athletes and leading health experts. Right now, it's time to reclaim your health and arm your immune system with convenient daily nutrition. Just one scoop and a cup of water every day. That's it. No need for a million different pills and supplements to look out for your health. To make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free one-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and five free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/NBA network. Again, that's athleticgreens.com/NBA network to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance. We'll be right back on Locked On Nuggets. Back here on Locked On Nuggets, thanks for making us part of your day and your first listen each and every day. Check out the NBA Big Board, Locked On NBA Big Board. Host Rafael Barlow from the NBA Draft Junkies and author of the NBA Big Board newsletter is joined by Richard Stamen, Sam Ferris, and Leif Thulin, giving fans an in-depth look into the NBA Draft, mock draft, player rankings, and of course the Big Boards. As Nuggets fan, you're going to want to be up on who's available, what you can get, move up options, move out options, all that. Check it out on the Locked On NBA Big Board. Let's go ahead and keep talking a little bit about this question that we're bringing here with edge and physicality. We've talked about these things. We haven't really defined them. What to you, when we're talking about somebody that plays with edge, what's like the definition of, let's start with toughness. Like, what's the definition of toughness for you in an NBA team level?
Well, I think the way I would approach it is that's the thing is it's almost less about toughness to me. The mental toughness is so much more important than the physical toughness. Like, a lot of these guys are professional athletes. They're physically tough, but it's just, how can you handle pressure? How can you handle complicated situations? How can you handle being down 10 points in the fourth quarter to where you don't give up? It's those kinds of things. But when we talk about physicality or really any of this stuff, the toughness that's the most important is guys that have pride. I almost feel like pride is the most important thing, in particular on the defensive end, where it's like, my pride comes from, this guy can't score on me. I'm not going to let it happen. And I just feel like the Nuggets have a lack of those types.
Yeah. So, you know, defensively, coaches always say they need to feel us, right?
Right. Yeah.
That's where I think a lot of this gets into is like, you want guys that the opponent is going to feel you the entire game. They're going to be like, he was in my shirt.
Right.
He was up on me. Like, I knew where he was there. I did not, like, I was aware of him at all times. Cause there are like a lot of defenders where you're just like, especially on Denver, they're just non-entities.
Well, you know what I'll do sometimes? Like, if I need that, like, I need the other team to feel or this or that, you start boxing out even when the ball's nowhere near you. You just do things, you know what I mean? Just do things to be like, hey, you don't get any possession. Ball bounced that way, boxing you all the way out of bounds. Now we're going to run back on the other direction. Like, it's just those kind of things. Make them you have the sense of pride that every second you're on the court, somebody is gaining an edge on the other person. And you just have to take pride that, is that you or is that them?
Yeah, I think there is, to a degree here, a level of, you want to be the team. Like, I think it was bad before the bubble when it felt like teams could bully them, right? You don't feel like that's a concern anymore. Is that...
I wonder, in a crazy thing, man, I wonder how much the hit changed that. Because a lot of this is just about perception. It's not about what actually is. It's like, do we feel like we can bully this team? And I just wonder how much of it was... Look... Not to relitigate this thing, but Markieff Morris felt like he could bully Nikola Jokic. He felt like he could. Like, I can do this. Nothing will happen because that's what I can do. And when that happened and the fallout from it, him missing all that time, I just wonder if there was – it's not the whole story, but I wonder if there's a little bit of a, okay, we can't cheap shot this team.
I think Joker has tried to, like, establish that you don't want to mess with him because he gets messed with so much because he's such a focal point. I think there's definitely been some of that. I do kind of feel like they could use a bench dude. It's just tough because oftentimes the guys that fill this category they're too much of a drawback in other aspects.
Faku?
No, it's not even Faku.
I think Faku was supposed to be. I mean, Faku brought that. Well, say what you will about him, he did bring that. He didn't bring other things. So I think Denver, when they were checking boxes in the offseason about things that the team needs or has, like, they probably thought they had a little bit more of that in Faku, and then he just couldn't play him.
Yeah, it's a guy like James Johnson but like Johnson is always like a little too, it's like a little too much, right? And like isn't good enough basketball.
I wonder if he didn't have his backstory, if we would say this about him, because I don't think he's to me, the thing that's funny about James Johnson, to me, I think he's actually a smart skill player, but his personality is that of a crazy person.
Yes.
But I don't think he plays like a crazy person. I don't know that he's an intimidating basketball player.
Yeah, like it's more a matter of in those scrums, I do think it's good to have a guy who everybody's like, man, I will. It's cool.
He might actually kill me. Like, yeah. Okay.
It's cool. Like there will be no, let's meet in the back. Like no one is going to be like, let's meet in the back, James Johnson. Right. And like so much of it's performative, but I do think that there is an advantage, not an edge. Cause we're talking about edge. There is an advantage to feeling like you're a team of badasses. I think there is an advantage of that to some regard, because like the NBA is theater, but it's also theater that everyone actively participates in. Like it blurs the line between theater and reality a little bit.
This is part of why though, man, this whole thing we're talking about is part of why I wish Jamal were able to come back this year, because I do think there's something to, I wonder how much Jamal feels passed up. Because I wonder how much the Nuggets feel passed up. I know they have to all feel it a little bit, but I just wonder how much Jamal feels a sense of like, oh, now everybody's talking about Ja and Booker and Shea and all these guys. Like, I was ahead of all those guys. Now they're ahead of me. I just wonder how much he feels it. I hope he feels it a lot, because that would give some of this edge we're talking about. Like, the Jamal who's here to prove everyone, like to like prove himself again, that would help the Nuggets a lot, I think. The Nuggets need a little, we're here to prove something. They need a lot of it.
I don't want to go there yet. I don't want to talk about that right now. I have Jamal thoughts that I want to get to, but we have plenty of time over the summer that I want to I need to think about it a little bit more. So, because I don't want it to come, like, I don't, if I talk about it now, it's going to come across the way that I don't want it to. But
man, this is a good one. I just mentioned Porter, but he's right here. MPJ, like, even more need, like, Michael Porter has not arrived in this league yet. He just hasn't. Like, if you ask Draymond Green what he thinks of Michael Porter, I mean, he wouldn't say the honest answer, because he doesn't think much of him. I'm sure of it.
Yeah. Yeah. He
needs a lot of that. Like, I'm here to prove I can do all the things people say I can't defend.
Yeah. I mean, I think he has that. I think I honestly think the injury has kind of really caused him to be like, I think that's why he was working so hard to come back. Like, it was so surprising to me when it was like, hey, MPJ might come back. I was like, really?
I don't question his desire to get on the court at all.
Like, he was very much like, he was trying so hard. And a lot of that, my perception is that the team was never like, hey, no, you can come back. Like, we think you can get back there and we could really use it. I think the team was like, you had back surgery. You should probably, like, I'm not saying that they were like, you shouldn't play, because they weren't. But when I checked in with people like halfway through his rehab process, it was very much I don't know if there's value in him coming back in terms of the risk factor. Like, I don't know if it's worth it in risk management with him, you know? And the fact that he like almost came back and then like suffered a setback is not great. Like, that's just, it's unfortunate, right? It would have been better if it was just like, chill, get yourself completely healthy, recover, and then come in.
You know what I could use, Matt? It's this dumbest thing. I could use one of those MPJ workout videos. I could use a little Instagram, the chair, you know, doing the ball handling around the chair, 8 straight threes. I could use one of those.
What do you want the what do you want the hashtag to be?
Man, prove them wrong.
There you go. That's what you want. That's
shut
you want.
Matt up.
There you go. The only way he's going to do that is if it's like film, if it's like an intense workout video of him just watching film and making notes. That's how he could shut me up on everything.
Can you imagine how funny it would be if you saw like an Instagram workout video that featured a player watching film?
Just like in watching the film. Okay. Like a defensive workout video would be great. We never see that. It's always just hitting jumpers.
He's doing
slides. Yes.
Slide
across. Yes. Do it. God.
Oh, he's ready.
This is how you get paid. I don't understand it. Everyone can make a jumper. It's the NBA. Do you want to do where the Nuggets going to be in a year? You want to save it for another year or for another day? Or do you want to...
We can do it on the other side to lead into our around the association.
All right, let's do that. We'll come back after a break here on Locked On Nuggets. But first, it's time. Oh, yes, it's time to talk about Built Bar. That's right. I love that this has become a meme.
It's time. Oh, yes.
It's time. Oh, yes. It's time to talk about Built Bar. But first, Built Bar. Built Bars are made with 100% real chocolate. That's including the Puffs, which are protein-infused marshmallow. They've got crazy flavors like banana cream pie and even churro. Who doesn't want a protein bar that tastes like a churro? And they're only 140 calories. It's summertime, so you're going to be out and active. My wife, I bought her a collapsible kayak, so she's going to need something out there because she gets hangry real badly whenever she does any sort of physical activity. So I'm going to make sure that she's got those Built Bars with her in the backpack if she needs them once she gets done with the kayak. Most Built Bars contain 130 calories, 4 grams of sugar, and 4 net carbs, along with 17 grams of protein. Compare that to a candy bar, which has usually got around 240 calories and 30 grams of sugar. Go to built.com and you can check out all your favorites. You can get a mix box, so you get like a different ones in it. That's like the best way to do it. They come with 12 flavors of Built Bars and Puffs. The mix boxes do. Go to built.com and use promo code LOCKED15, LOCKED15, and you'll get 15% off your order. Use promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at built.com. We'll be right back on Locked On Nuggets. Back here on Locked On Nuggets. Thanks for making this part of your day and your first listen every day. We got so many comments about Built Bar in the comment section. Just cracking up. All right, so I had this kind of thought of just, you know, I like doing the idea of, I think most of the NBA discourse is built on expectation. I just think it's, I mean, most of sports, that's like sports, right? Is what do you expect? And how the team perform relative to that expectation. Like, that's how you decide whether you had a good year or a bad year. I don't think teams or players necessarily operate on along those lines. Sometimes they do, but not all the time. But I think fans definitely do. I think media definitely does. So I think, like, a good question here is just, where do you see the Nuggets in a year? Like, MPJ, Jamal coming back, but there's been a lot of, like, slow rolling. They're not going to be their same for quite a while. We're expecting a revamped roster, but we don't know what it's going to look like. So we have to kind of do it. Like, a lot of this is, it's just speculation. Welcome to Nuggets content in late May. But I do think it's an interesting exercise of a year from now in the second round of the NBA playoffs. Where do you expect the Denver Nuggets to be?
I mean, I expect them to be in the playoffs. That's for sure. Still in it, which is funny to think. Like, I was thinking about this when you texted me the topic today. Right now, I am so relaxed, Matt. Like, I've been going for walks. I've been enjoying the weather's been great. I've done some yard work. I've just been like in this very, the playoffs are happening. I'm kind of over the last season already in you know, any ways that we're lingering. Next year, we're all going to be nervous wrecks. The Nuggets will be in the playoffs and we'll be in the like fifth straight week of just being on the edge of your seat because the second round of the playoffs are going to be really tough, I'm sure, next year. But to answer your question more specifically, the way you expect it, I mean, it's the Nuggets are maybe them. Who has a more mysterious year ahead of them than Denver, Matt? Like, who? Most teams you kind of know the range of outcomes is narrow. Like, we know Phoenix next year, maybe they're the best team, maybe they're the fifth best team, but they're not going to be that far outside those boxes. Denver parameters are pretty wide, in my opinion.
I think it's funny just because I've just seen so many wild changes year over year that, like you say, like, well, Phoenix is going to be there. And I'm like, I don't know. I don't know. You know, yeah. Like, Chris is going to be 38. You don't know how injuries are going to go.
For sure.
Ayton up in the air in terms of the contract.
Whenever I factor in like injuries, I only factor them into the extent that they are likely. For example, yeah. Michael Porter, we can't say like, oh, well, if he gets hurt, you can't throw that out because the odds of him getting hurt are kind of high. Chris Paul, relatively high given his age. But you couldn't say like Devin Booker could get hurt because it's like we have no reason to think he will.
I think a lot for me is based off of the average rate of injuries. And then if a team overperforms that, I tend to think that like, okay, you staved it off for a while. But especially if you got a lot of miles on you.
Ooh, the old like the – it came up red four times in a row. We're due for a black. Okay.
Right, exactly. That fallacy for sure. But no, I think actually maybe more importantly, if you want to actually put it in rational terms, is more about workload, right? You have these deep playoff runs over and over and over again.
Ooh, that's very good stuff.
That does tend to, you play more basketball, you're more likely to get hurt because of the wear and tear on the body.
Three-peats, this is part of why three-peats are so hard, as you go to the finals three times in a row. You play basically an entire extra season from a team that missed the playoffs 3 years in a row. The Suns, should they make the finals or even the Western Conference finals, it looks likely, they will have gone so deep 2 years in a row that it's kind of has that same effect. That's why teams fall off in that third year.
It's true. So I expect them – I guess I would say, like, I expect Denver to be – yeah, I expect them to be home for game five.
Yeah.
In a 2-2 series.
In a 2-2 series. Mm. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, look, the second round's going to be tough. I mean, next year, you're talking about some combination of Phoenix, Golden State, Clippers, Nuggets. Who else is going to be really good next season? You could have a Pelicans. You could have a Mavs again.
Along these same lines, this is a question that just popped in my head. I think home court's really important next season. They got to have a really good regular season record, because one of the things I think that we've learned is, like, you know, they've won road games. They won road games in the playoffs. They did it in 2019. They did it in 2021. But as I watch these playoffs in general, and I've had to like study things like the. Like home teams in game five in a 2-2 series, Adam, they literally, since 2003, like they've won 80% of the time. Like that's
crazy.
You can do it, right? You could steal game. It's possible.
You're part of the 20%, but like you'd rather be the 80% than the 20%.
Yeah. Like if you're going to take the approach of championship or bust, you have to set yourself up to have all these advantages, because I don't think you can just go in and be like, well, we'll just find a way, which honestly, like that was a little bit how I was with this team. After seeing them in the bubble and going down 3-1, I was just like, well, they'll find a way. And now I'm kind of back to like, look, everybody's really good. Everybody's really tough. You need as many advantages as you can get. And I think that home court, at least through the first two rounds, is going to be imperative.
Yeah. I think I 100% agree with that. That means a top two seed, which is just going to be so tough. Like part of me, it wonders how hard Denver presses for that top seed. Cause it might be really hard. We might have some really good regular season teams next year.
If you had to blindly guess like a seeding for them right now, where would you be at?
Two.
Yeah. Which, you know, we're going to sound very homerish in that regard, because it's like, again, like you look at it and you go, like, where are the Suns going? Where are the Warriors going? You know, Memphis, I do think, regresses a little bit. I just do.
Yeah, I mean, they seem in line for it. We sound like homers, Matt, but to be the 2-seed, I guess it is 8 games from where Memphis was this year. That's a lot.
Yeah.
That's a lot. That's a good bump. 2 or 3.
But you look at it and you go, I mean, the thing is, one of the advantages we talked about, like how unknowable a lot of this is and how murky, and you talked about the variance with Memphis, with Denver. One of the things I think that makes this easier though, is that you and I can definitely see like the path to getting to that 2 spot isn't, it's not like, how are we going to do that? Like, well, we're just going to have to figure out a lot of complex stuff. It's like, get your second and third best players back and make sure the bench isn't the worst in the league.
Right.
Like that's really it. Based off of their win percentage this season and how many wins they were cost by the bench unit, fix the bench unit, which I honestly just think, like, I'll say this, they're not going to, but if they just ran the bench unit back year over year, it wouldn't be as bad. That's just how these things go.
Right.
Like, it's very rare that you have the worst bench unit in the league 2 seasons in a row to be that bad.
Yeah, it won't be that way. I mean, part of having a bad bench is not having your starters, so your bench becomes your starters.
Right. But
it's funny when you ask like this, and I just looked at this year's standings and was like, oh, they're 6th to get all the way up to 2nd. Here's the better example. The year prior, they were 3rd. Year before that, they were 3rd. Year before that, they were 2nd. So they've actually been 2nd or 3rd 3 of the last 4 years, with the 1 year that they weren't was the year they didn't have 2 of their top players. So the odds of them being 2nd, 3rd, or 1st are actually pretty high looking at historical precedent of this healthy team.
Got to win the division games. Got to say that again.
Don't you think the division games and the home games will sort of take center stage next year because of how poorly they did this year?
Yeah.
I think that'll be a focus, especially
the home part. I think Malone came into the season very much of the mindset of like, okay, we have this handled, and then they were bad at it. And I think he, because the 2018-19 season, that was his message in training camp. Like, they had their dinner, and that was what he said. Is like, we like our goal, like, we want to win the division, because if we win the division, we're going to have a top seed.
Like, George, yeah, George is good. George Karl is good about these things, like articulating these things. Sometimes you have an identity. Like the Suns right now, the coolest stat of the 2022 season is that they are what, 51 or 52 and 0 when leading going into the fourth. That's a cool identity of like, hey, if we have a lead, you know, you have no hope.
Yeah,
I think Denver next year can cultivate an identity of like, they just need to do it for the home crowd. Like, hey, we are a hell of a team, but when we get home, we don't lose. This is our home court. We've reclaimed it. I feel like that could be a really powerful thing for them to kind of emphasize next year.
Yeah. Have more home wins than road wins is a pretty good starting block for improving the record next season. Yeah. I mean, look, I always say these same things, right? It's like, win the home games, win your division games, and beat the teams under 500. They beat the teams under 500 this year, even though they didn't feel like it. They weren't great at home and they didn't handle their division games. Like, you look at the division record, like, that's literally what kept them like from being probably the four, maybe the three, is the four losses to Utah, the losses to OKC. Like, those really hurt. And honestly, the division isn't going to be better next year. It's going to be worse. Utah's probably going to look different and will probably take a step back. Portland, there's a lot to talk about, but I know.
What do you think of that? Zach LaVine to Portland is kind of the latest rumor.
I love Zach LaVine, and even I'm like, eh.
I mean, it's a good team. It's just the West is so good. That's a team that will not have a very good defensive backcourt. That'll be a very easy team to score on. They'll score a lot of points. But they would be a tough out. Now, do they have the bandwidth to get a LaVine and an Ayton? Can they completely reshuffle the deck in 1 year? Do they have
that? That would be great. If they got LaVine and Ayton, I would all of a sudden be like,
that's a contender. Right. I mean, I'd try a contender.
Yeah.
You'd have to nail the other spots just because to win, you'd have to nail everything. But that's a great trio. That would be a very scary trio.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's possible.
But if they don't, then I'm still just kind of like, the idea was, well, they traded CJ and got all this stuff back and they'll have that stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, and Nasir Little and Anthony Simons made a jump this year, and they'll have LaVine, which is basically replacing CJ. So it's like the stuff you traded for CJ plus CJ is
the better. He's I think more difficult to guard than CJ.
But yeah, I would agree.
Maybe I put it this way. He puts more pressure on the defense than CJ. CJ is a really good tough shot maker and just shot maker in general. But
I don't mean to be this guy, but I am. I just, if Nurkic is still their center and Dame is still their point guard,
you're going to give up points. You're going to have a bad defense.
I just don't think you can be good enough defensively. If you have a better guard coming off of screens, then you can do it. And if you have a better center that can play higher up, you can do it. But you can't do that combination. Like, that's my opinion, is that as long as Dame and Nurk are the one and the five, they are going to be a bad defense. That's my position. I think we can agree that the two seed is probably a target, and that's where we expect them to be. What do you make of the Celtics and Bucks series in terms of that's the only one where teams are really winning on the other opponent's home floor? It's been nail biter back and forth. It's been very close. It's been blown leads. Like, that is a tough ass series to be in.
Who is the equivalent of Al Horford on Denver's roster this season?
Oh, good Lord. There's absolutely not one. It's me.
What is Al Horford when you do like best players? Because he's really good. It's hard. He's in the group where you stop ranking him, but he's also like so good. I mean, he's such a valuable, you know, role player.
Yeah.
And the reason I'm bringing it up is the Suns are up in their series 3-2 instead of down 3-2 because DeAndre Ayton had a ridiculous, I can't remember if it was game one or game two. The Celtics are back in the series tied 2-2 because Al Horford had a ridiculous game four. This is what's so crazy about getting to the top. Nobody would have said, Like, the Celtics are going to beat the Bucks because of Al Horford's going to have a game. But that's just what happens. You get to hear the margins matter so much, and you have some guy step up. So for Denver next year, is that Aaron Gordon? Is that somebody else, that Monte Morris, that doesn't just have a good game and does their role, but actually makes a swing, like has a swing quarter where you're like, wow, best player on the court for a quarter in a series that features like superstars.
Yeah. I definitely think that like they need a Horford. They need, and this is why I've been so high on like the idea of them getting more veterans instead of younger. Like that's been a lot of like what I think. Now the front office has kind of pushed back on the idea of that being affordable. And Al's definitely not of that. It's like, it's a very exceptional situation with Al Horford, but
yeah.
they do need, I think, somebody that can be that guy that just, I think they need a veteran that is hitting big shots. That to me is, you don't need 30. But you do need like you need that guy that I always talk about it in terms of the other team is just like the fans are like, we're getting killed by this guy. Like yeah. This guy is who's killing us. The Nuggets absolutely did not have that this season.
And Al Horford, by the way, he does these types of things every game where it's like rebound and rotates over and, you know, those types of things. What he doesn't do is knock down 4 or 5 3-pointers in one quarter. And he just happened to do it in that game. That's why it was even above and beyond what you just regularly expect from Al Horford.
He's shooting 52% from three in the playoffs, by the way.
Him and Jaren Jackson Jr., I can't believe those guys are good 3-point shooters. Disgusting Horford, looking shots.
Yeah, Horford at least, like, he's been working on it forever. Like, I'm not surprised that Horford.
Both of them, I'm sure, have worked on it. They've just worked on, like,
yeah,
the ugliest looking thing you've ever seen.
Yeah, I mean,
the ball, like, the weirdest
Horford was
way.
Shooting back in Atlanta. Like, Bud was the first one to start working on putting them five out, you know. Jaren.
His is just like looks like it's the weirdest shot ever.
Yeah, it's a trebuchet for sure.
It might be Aaron Gordon, by the way. Like, he might be the guy for Denver. If you told me Nuggets down 2-1 in a playoff series, Jokic has a good game, Murray has a good game, Porter has a good game, but you needed someone to step up. If it was like Aaron Gordon does all the stuff he's supposed to do, but he also just went for 16 points in the fourth quarter, I don't expect it. I'm not counting on it, but it's a thing that could happen that you'd be like, that's why they won the series. They got the Aaron Gordon quarter when it mattered most.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's a great point. I think the Grizzlies are done. John Morant. Doubtful for postseason with the knee bruise. They needed him versus this matchup specifically. I think the Mavs are done.
You want to know the funny thing you just glossed over here? Dylan Brooks was a guy that like everybody wanted 3-4 weeks ago. He was like a name that you would hear. Like, could you poach Dylan Brooks? I wonder if that has completely changed. I mean, he is.
I cannot. Let me put it this way. If the Nuggets get Dylan Brooks, I am instilling a no Dylan Brooks talk on the pod. Like, I don't care if he goes for 50. I will not engage in Dylan Brooks conversation. Because, like, here's the thing. I love Dylan, and I accept Dylan for who he is. Like, I know who Dylan is.
He's a Will, like, Barton mold. He's, like, in that mold.
Yeah. 100%, except he's a great defender. Like,
yeah. Yeah, so, he's a competitor, for sure.
But, like, he would absolutely become the new scapegoat. And I would just be like, we're not talking. We are not. We don't talk about Bruno and we don't talk about Dylan. Those are two things we do not do.
I don't even know the context of that other than the song. I don't know what it means in the movie. I don't know the plot of the movie.
Your girls haven't watched.
They have. I just haven't watched it with them.
Oh,
I mean, it's been on while I do things.
This may surprise you. I love musicals. I'm a big.
Wow. That does surprise me.
Like, I have a theater background. So, like, big musical fan. Very, very much love Encanto. It's great. But yeah, we would not talk about Dylan Brooks. It's not the worst option in the world, but I will, like, if the Nuggets front office were to bounce the idea off of me, my response would be like, please do not do this to me. Please. Yeah. Don't get Dylan Brooks.
That's funny. What player do you not want them to get? That could be a good topic.
Yeah. We're definitely going to do that show too.
Yeah.
We got to do that show too. Before we get out of here, I think the Mavs are done. I think the Grizzlies are done.
You do, man. Yeah, so that one, I'm not really ready to go to. Yeah. Somebody threw out a statistic that was like game five series tied 30 point wins. The team has gone on to win game six by an average of like 20 points or something. I can't remember what the stat was. It was overwhelming, but I don't know, man. Like, that game unraveled in 5 minutes. That was like, it reminds me almost of Denver in the first two games of the Golden State one, where you look at it and you go, it all happened in like one thing. So can you fix that one thing? And if you can, the rest of this game was close.
Game three and four, the Suns just played such, they were so uncharacteristic. Like,
that's actually also true.
Yeah. Like there's like, let's say 4, 8, 12. There's probably 14 quarters of the series where I'm just like, the Suns are way better. The Suns are just way better.
Here's the value though of getting a series to 2-2 is when that happens and it does feel like Phoenix has more avenues to win. I mean, maybe it's the Luka 50 piece game. Maybe it's the Jalen Brunson 40 piece game. Like maybe it's the Maxi Kleber 5-for-5 from three. Like now you're only one heroic performance away from forcing a game seven, which we all know is much more of a unique one. So you just need a crazy performance to overcome the gap.
But there's two things in there. Is that like, I think they can get it to seven, but I'm just like, I cannot see them beating Phoenix in a game seven at home.
I can only in that game is probably 85 to 89. Like it's just, does Cam Johnson make any shots in a game seven?
Right.
Maybe, maybe not. Maybe he does, but we just don't know.
Anyway, I think that the Mavs are done. I think the Grizzlies are done. I think the Sixers are done. I have no idea on Bucks Celtics. I have no idea. Everyone kind of is like, oh, Celtics have got this now. And I'm like, I don't know. Like, they should be favored, but the Bucks are stubborn as hell. So that one I don't know about.
I know that one's going to be, that's just a great series, man. Just a great series.
I'm worried that whoever comes out of that is going to be too exhausted. Like, I'm genuinely kind of worried that whoever comes out of that is just going to be so beat to hell. They're not going to have anything left.
Could be. And they're also weirdly the team that's like last, right? They're everybody else is ahead of them in games played or whatever. So they might, we might actually have everything lined up and they have like five extra days of playing against each other because everybody else.
And then like Miami finishes it in six and then it has like a rest point and teams that go to game seven in the next game we found are basically, it's like they win like 30% of the time on the road. It's rough. So Miami and Philly aren't good though. I disagree on Miami. I think Miami's a really good team. I've actually gotten a lot of respect for Miami in terms of like how they play, regardless of how much that was a clown shoes incident all around from all parties in Denver earlier this season. Bam Adebayo has earned a lot of respect for me. I think it's a very good team. So
yeah, I think I don't think they're a pushover by any means. You have to beat them. They don't beat themselves.
Okay. That's going to wrap it up for Locked On Nuggets. Thanks for joining us, everybody. Have yourselves a great week. We'll be back tomorrow with another episode. I'm going to have a solo tomorrow, or I'll try and wrestle up a guest. I haven't decided which. And then we'll be back on Friday. Same time, same bad time, same bad channel. Have yourselves a great week. We'll see you guys again next time on Locked On Nuggets.